Good morning, judges. Good afternoon, I'm sorry. My name is Allison Lee.
Good afternoon, Ms. Lee. It does seem like it's been a long day. I'll be with you on that. Do you desire to reserve some rebuttal time?
Yes, ma'am. I do.
What would you like?
2 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judge. If it pleases the court, judges, this is a constructive possession case, not an actual possession case. And what we have is we have a small compact car with 5 passengers in it. And Corey Dagner is a backseat passenger sitting behind the passenger seat. And we have a routine traffic stop. He's in a vehicle that is not his vehicle. He's not the driver. He's not the registered owner. There's no question as to who got into the vehicle when. We have 5 individuals. A police officer approaches due to a defective taillight. We have a bottle of beer in the center console, which causes the officer to ask the front seat passenger to exit the vehicle. The front seat driver is asked to exit the vehicle so that the officer can show her the defective light. And then we have Corey Dagner sitting in the back with a bottle of beer between his feet, and he's having a oh my goodness moment because he's not sure whether he's going to be pulled out of the car as well.
Ms. Lee, let me interrupt you.
Yes, Judge.
He denied that he had the gun, but claimed that Reeves had the gun.
What Mr. Dagner said was, "I didn't touch it. I heard it drop." That's what he said.
No. But earlier he said that he claimed that Reeves had the gun. Do you agree with that?
Yes. He said that
Doesn't that show that he had knowledge of the gun?
That showed that he had knowledge of the gun once the gun hit the ground, once it fell. The police officer, Judge, never asks Mr. Dagner, did you know that the gun was there? So the only thing that is established by the evidence, Judge, is that as the officer is approaching the vehicle, Mr. Dagner hears a gun drop. And when the officer asks him about the gun, Corey Dagner said, the front seat passenger had it. I heard it drop. And that is all that we have. And if the question about when did you know the gun was there, if that question is not asked, then that answer, I submit to this court, cannot be assumed. You cannot assume that when Corey Dagner entered into the car, he knew the gun was there. The officer...
Why is that relevant in terms of whether he knew it before he got in the car or once he was already in the car? How is that material?
I think that in order to establish that Corey Dagner intended to exercise dominion and control over the weapon, it has to be established that he knew the weapon was there. And the evidence shows strictly and solely that Corey Dagner learned the weapon was there when he heard it drop to the ground, when, as he said, the front seat passenger tossed it as the officer is approaching the car. And that's all that we know. And we cannot assume that Corey Dagner had knowledge of the existence or the presence of the gun prior to him hearing it dropping. Corey Dagner never says, and he's never asked, when did you know it was there? How did it get there? Do you know it's there? The only thing that we know is that Corey Dagner lets the officer know, and this is after he's been pulled out, that he heard it drop. He never even admits that he saw it. The officer...
Does the case law say that in order to have knowledge that you have to physically see it, can it be revealed to you by any of your senses? Smell?
Yes, Judge. It can be, but there has to be evidence of that. Because the case law does state that there has to be some sort of conduct or some sort of act, some sort of statement or something that shows that Corey Dagner knows that that weapon is there. And the officer even testified, by the way the gun was laying, he's not sure whether Corey Dagner could have seen it from where he was sitting. And he also, the police officer, testified that, yes, the front seat front-seat passenger could have been the one that left it. He doesn't think he was the one that left it, but he could have. So he acknowledges that, one, Corey Dagner might not have seen it, which tends to support Corey Dagner or our position that he doesn't know it's there till he hears it hit the ground. There is just no evidence, Judge, that prior to the officer approaching the vehicle that Corey Dagner even knows that the gun is there. He hears it. There's no statement by Mr. Dagner or by any of there were no witnesses produced that establishes that prior to Corey Dagner hearing that gun hit the ground, that he even knew it was there. And I think that's a critical issue for the Commonwealth. Failure to establish that Corey Dagner had the intention to establish dominion and control over a weapon that he even knew it was present. Failing to establish that prior to the front seat tossing that gun down under the front seat passenger seat, which is where the gun was found. Failing to establish that Corey Dagner knew that that weapon was there prior to the officer coming. And I'll cut my own self off and submit to the court that the knowledge of the gun arises when Corey Dagner hears it hit the ground as the officer is approaching. That's what the evidence suggests, and it does not suggest anything else. And we cannot assume, because the proper questions were not asked, we cannot assume, well, he must have known it was there because it was right there. He must have known it was there because his foot might or might not have touched it. He must have known it was there. We can't assume that. We have to just take the evidence for what it is.
Well, counsel, let me ask you a question.
Yes, ma'am.
One of the statements that's attributed to your client is that when he's asked, did you know about the gun, he says, well, when I heard it drop. Doesn't that imply that he was aware of what it was, the nature and character of what was being dropped?
I don't believe that it does, Judge, because I don't think you need special training to know when you're in a car when a gun hits the ground and is kind of tossed. We don't know whether anything was said by anyone else. All we do know is that Corey Dagner establishes that his knowledge of the gun becomes apparent when he hears it hit the ground. And that's it. We don't even know at the time that it hit the ground whether Corey Dagner knew it was a gun at that point. What we do know is the officer asks him about the gun that he finds in the car. We don't know whether that's the first time Corey hears of it and is like, oh, wow, you know what, that's probably what I heard plop down. There's just too many things that we don't know for us to assume that Corey Dagner had the knowledge that would give rise to the intent that he wanted to exercise control and dominion over the weapon. The Commonwealth had just one witness, and in a constructive possession case, I submit to this court that you have to establish more than mere proximity. The officer even testified that the only thing that made him suspect or believe that the gun belonged to Corey Dagner was his close proximity to it. There was also some concern by the officer that Corey Dagner was a little nervous.
His testimony was a whole lot more than that, wasn't it?
To my recollection, no, sir. The only thing that established for the officer, well, he did say, let me correct that. He did say that because of the way the gun was positioned, it was slightly, he said, protruding from under the front seat passenger. And the way the butt of the gun was pointed, the officer believed that it would have been more difficult, not impossible, but more difficult for one of the other passengers to have placed that gun there. But the officer further acknowledges that, yes, the front seat passenger could have been the one to put it there. He could have. The officer, however, just believed it was Corey Dagner because the gun was closer to the back of the passenger seat than to the front of the passenger seat, which means that the front seat passenger could have tossed it under the seat, and that's where it lands. We don't even have evidence as to how that could have worked. All we know is that the knowledge about the gun came.
Well, the officer testified that the handle of the firearm was facing toward appellant with the barrel pointing toward the front seat. He further noted without objection that anybody who handles guns knows not to touch them by the barrel. So a reasonable inference from that would be is that Reeves in the front seat didn't place the gun under the seat. Isn't that a fair inference?
I don't believe it is, because you would have to establish first that Reeves is an expert in how to handle guns and just not some guy out in the street tossing the gun. And the officer did admit that he did not know whether Reeves was an expert at handling guns, because the officer also testified, as is acknowledged in the response brief, that it was possible that the front seat passenger could have been the one to toss it there. And I think when you're looking at what's possible or what's probable, the evidence has to rise to the has to go beyond a reasonable doubt. Even if you suspect strongly that Mr. Dagner might have been or probably was the one that placed that gun there, that's not sufficient to sustain a conviction, Judge. What is sufficient to sustain the conviction is that Mr. Dagner intended to exercise control and dominion over the weapon that was under Mr. Reeves' seat, and that there's no way that anyone else other than Mr. Dagner could have put it there. And again, we don't have any evidence that Dagner knew prior to that gun dropping and being tossed under the seat that he knew it was there. And that to me, Judge, is critical. That to me is critical, because how do you intend to possess something you don't even know is there? And you learn it's there after it's too late to do anything about it. There's an officer approaching your vehicle. What do you do at that point? You just sit there. If there's no more questions, I will.
Question. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Good afternoon again. Donald Jeffrey on behalf of the Commonwealth. From our perspective, this is very much a standard of review case. It's obvious from some of the earlier questions. The court's pretty familiar with the facts here. It is a totality analysis. Judge Frank, as you pointed out, the officer made some pretty specific observations about the location and the placement of the handle, which I think are relevant to your inquiry in this case. Proximity standing alone is not enough, but it is a factor. You do have the nervousness, and I cited to the court the Ricks case and other cases that had cited that. The fact that he may have had other reasons to be nervous does not discount that from your analysis in this case. And Ricks is a published opinion, and that has been applied in the constructive possession context. You know, I would also note that there is this hypothesis that the two backseated passengers were involved. However, I mean, the defendant, first of all, can't rise above his own testimony on that point, and he has it attributed to the front seat passenger. That's problem one with that. And the officer also testified about the difficulties the backseat passengers would have had placing it under the seat that way. So I think that hypothesis is gone, and what we're mostly left with is the front seat passenger. And again, you've got the officer's testimony. You know, I would note that there is no testimony. I mean, there is certainly nothing in his statement as the officer rendered it that addresses timing one way or the other. So I would suggest to the court that the hypothesis of innocence that thing was slid under there right as the officer was stopping the vehicle doesn't flow from the evidence, and that is not properly before you. I did make a point of this on brief, and I don't know that it's a huge point, because obviously some people are more eloquent than others, but I think that the terminology that was used by the defendant was drop as opposed to slide, which is what, I mean, that's how I would expect it to be rendered if the front seat passenger was going to discard that quickly. And obviously, not to make too much of this, but in addition to the defendant's statement being silent, as it was as rendered by the officer, with respect to the timing, the court is not required to accept that self-serving testimony at all. And I think if you read the judge's rulings, it's certainly not clear either time when it was addressed right at the end of the guilt phase and after the motion to reconsideration that the court did accept that. So this notion that you know, when you couple all the other factors in this case with the location of the gun and the officer's testimony, the court is not required to accept that, and that's an issue on appellate review for this court, too. So I think you can really go beyond the fact that the statement itself was silent with respect to the timing and go even further than that and say that the court, trial court, isn't required to even accept that. And on appeal, for purposes of review, I think your assumption is that that was rejected.
Mr. Jeffries, the trial court ultimately found that appellant knew the gun was there and was within his reach. Those are factual findings that we're bound by if there's any evidence to support it. Am I right?
Those factual findings are correct. I would submit to you that, not to undercut my own argument, I do think that if the scenario flows from the evidence that that thing was immediately discarded as the officers were approaching, I'm not sure that is enough for constructive possession, because the temporal nature of how that got there and it being subject to dominion and control, that might be iffy in terms of sufficiency. And I'm not trying to cut the legs out from under myself, but I think my more significant issue is that, given the standard of appellate review, that the court should reject that notion, that hypothesis of innocence, because I think he could have had knowledge. I think he could have had knowledge that it was there, having been immediately discarded. There really wasn't anything he could do about that, I guess, other than doing something else to exercise dominion and control, either by picking it up and kicking it. So I think if defense counsel were correct that hypothesis of innocence is a valid one on appeal, then there might really be a legitimate issue with respect to that. But to circle back to your original question, Judge Frank, those are factual findings that you are required to give deference to.
Explain to me more about the temporal aspect. You said that if Reeves dropped that gun immediately upon the police arriving, maybe that undercuts your argument.
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Well, simply because I think there might be, I think knowledge is out of the picture, because he admits he knew the gun was there, and the court, I think, made a factual finding. I don't think it's plainly wrong. I mean, the wording of the testimony could have been better on that, but I don't think that's plainly wrong. But I think it's dominion and control is really the pivotal issue here. And I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, put the car on the back seat right next to the defendant. The police approach. And the first thing this guy hears is a thud, and it's landing right next to his left leg. It's there. It's within his reach. He knows what it is. I don't think that's enough to support a constructive possession conviction, to be perfectly frank. Or I think there's a good argument that it's not enough, because it's there. I mean, I guess the issue is that enough to establish dominion and control beyond a reasonable doubt when it lands in an instant before the police get there? Because I think that's where the defense was ultimately going with the argument. Does that actually address your question, Judge Frank?
It does.
My point in terms of appellate review is that type of hypothesis is one that for purposes of appellate review, given the standard, should be rejected. But I do think if there's sort of a momentary, if it's discarded seconds before the police get there and just happens to land next to the defendant.
Are there any other facts other than what you just said? Is there any facts to suggest that it wasn't momentarily dropped or momentarily?
Again, I'm relying on the fact that the trial court can reject his statement, because that really was the only testimony with respect to it. So you've got the proximity. You've got the nervousness, which, again, even though there may be alternate hypotheses as to why he was nervous, that's a factor in your analysis. And the statement itself was actually silent as to timing, so that hypothesis doesn't spring from the evidence. I think that's really my argument in a nutshell. You do have, of course, the location of the gun, and you did have that fairly strong testimony from the officer in terms not just of location, but how people would normally handle guns. I would certainly submit to you that I don't think it takes an expert in gun handling to know that handling a gun by the barrel is a bad idea. I certainly don't qualify as a firearms expert, and I know that much. And I think that's probably within the purview of most lay people. So I think when you couple those facts together, that's why that hypothesis of innocence doesn't flow here. By giving you the response that I did before, I was suggesting that I think there could be something to that if that was actually a set of facts that was properly before you, but I don't believe that it is. I think everything else I've covered, either by my argument or by brief, or probably at this point both. If the court has further questions, I'll be happy to address those. Often these cases do rise and fall, I think, on the standard of review, and I would submit to you that given that standard that the evidence is adequate, and I would ask you to affirm the judgment below.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. Ms. Lee.
Yes, ma'am, very briefly.
Very briefly. Just taking some of the things that the Attorney General argued, the State Attorney General argued. The police officer never says, well, he sees Mr. Dagner doing some sort of suspicious movement as he's approaching the vehicle. If there's a gun, if I place a gun down right under the seat, am I not going to take my foot and try to kick it away from me? I mean, that if somebody knows a weapon is there, if they're exercising control and dominion over it, at some point, I'm going to put a gun down, then leave it right next to my foot. That just doesn't make sense. And just to address the issue about not needing to be a gun expert, I mean, people are killed every day by mishandling weapons. Sometimes people mishandle them. The nervousness, again, we explained that with the beer. And again, I just think that the evidence is deficient. The gentleman says that Mr. Dagner could have had knowledge. Well, could have had the gun, could have had possession of it, could have had the intention to exercise control. Could have is not sufficient to sustain a conviction. And if there's no more questions, I will see.
Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Thank you.
We will come down and greet counsel.